And the title is Race Reclamation and the Resilience Revolution. And just to tell you a bit about Dr. Larry Ward, he was ordained as a minister in 1972. And in 1994, he met Thich Nhat Hanh and was ordained as a lay priest in Thich Nhat Hanh's tradition. He has a PhD in religious studies with an emphasis on Buddhism, also a degree in psychology and organizational behavior. So his work is very much focused on the intersection of mindfulness and neuroscience. He lived and worked in more than 20 countries where he offered services to Fortune 500 companies in diversity education and organizational change. Also, he assisted Thich Nhat Hanh throughout the world on many peacemaking missions. And his upcoming book titled America's Racial Karma will be available in the fall. And the reason I choose his work tonight is I very much appreciate his interdisciplinary approach. He integrates Buddhism with neuroscience and also his own work in trauma and resilience. Also, he talks a lot and refers to indigenous wisdom and how he encourages all of us to reclaim our own ancestral inheritance in terms of our artistic expressions as a personal way of liberation. And the result of his integrated approach, I find it very accessible and very pragmatic. So this is his piece again, Race, Reclamation, and the Resilience Revolution. And it's very recent. It's like he wrote it at the end of May. Dear friends, I know this is a very difficult moment. The fires of grief are burning all around us and within us. It's a continuation of the retribution of America's racial karma. This 500-year legacy of tragedy has not escaped me. I started a poem. It is not finished yet, but I suspect it will show up in the book I've been writing on the subject. So I'll give you where I'm so far. Innocent suffering still flowing. Perpetrators showered with fame and silent applause. Slave catchers still live. It is why we run. To say, I didn't do it in the whispers of your mind is an indication of your culpability. To say that someone, it was not me, when in fact it was you. Animating every move with your quiet permission, commission is the same as omission. There is no hiding place down here. I've been telling some close friends that it was much easier for me to write my dissertation than it is to write this book on America's racial karma because of my own journey. The writing puts me in touch with the vast, vast ocean of trauma, both within me and around me and throughout history. I found a great phrase from Oscar Wilde that I adapted. We live in the land of sorrow. And Oscar Wilde's great phrase is where there is sorrow, there is holy ground. We must understand our sorrow as divine energy and not simply as political error. We must understand our suffering profoundly. The gate of ancestral grief is being flooded in all of us. Every day since I've been working on this book in a focused way, for the last 6 to 7 months or year, I scan the world looking for news. I keep looking for news in which one day I will not discover that a person of color or a person of gender expansiveness is not being destroyed. I have not yet had that day. And so my practice is to help me deal with the disappointment, the frustration, the fatigue, the anxiety, the overwhelm, the panic, and the hypervigilance. Notice in yourself how all the events of the most recent months of people being murdered has affected you and your nervous system. Not just your thoughts and how your body has been responding. Have you noticed your own hypervigilance? Have you noticed your own fatigue? Have you noticed your own sense of overwhelm or panic or even hopelessness? All these issues, all these feelings, all these sensations rise in us, but shame also rises in us. It's the shame of not being valued as a human being. And it's the shame of the experience of not being worthy of love. This is our work. This is my work with my experience of the pain of the last 500 years. Yesterday, I spent in silence for George Floyd. I found it healing. On the ways I practice, one of the ways I practice with my own trauma is to let it be, not try to fix it. Trauma must be respected because it is part of our precious humanness. We can experience wanting to fight or flee or just numbness. We may experience the paralysis of not knowing what to do. This is our biological system in action. It is normal and there is nothing wrong. In fact, you may say something is right if we are experiencing this fear, this anger, this numbness, this heartbreak. I use poetry to practice resourcing myself. I dabble in writing poetry and I also enjoy the poetry of others. I spend as much time as I can outside of the four walls of my house. I spend time with the birds, chatting with them every morning and every evening. At sunrise, I'm outside feeling the warmth of the sun. And at sunset, I'm outside with the moonlight. It is very important not to undersell ourselves simply as human defined. We must understand ourselves as nature defined. When we understand ourselves that way, we can touch our generativity. We can touch our resilience that is in fact beyond time and space. Singing, music, dance movement, all of these are ancient practices from our ancestors that many of us have forgotten. The birds remind me of that. And when we think of ancestors, please remember our greatest ancestor, Mother Earth. She is filled with energies that can help us heal. She is filled with equanimity that holds us together on this planet. Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a poem after a bombing that happened in Vietnam, a bombing, of course, by Americans. He wrote, I hold my face in my two hands. No, I'm not crying. I hold my face in my two hands to keep my loneliness warm. Two hands protecting my hands. Two hands protecting. Two hands nourishing. Two hands preventing my soul from leaving me in anger. And it is very important here to understand the point of anger. In Buddhism, anger is normal, perfect human experience that you may and I may be having in daily life, but especially at this moment. The point of this is not to lose ourselves. not to lose our sense of oneness with ourselves, not to lose our sense of loving ourselves, not to lose ourselves in fragmentation. And it could be anger, and it could be fear, and it could be numbness. But the point of practice is not to lose ourselves. We don't push away suffering. You feel every ounce of suffering through your whole body, but we don't drown in it either. And that's the great practice of my life. To me, the task before us is first of all, self-care and figuring it out for yourself. Who would have thought that we'd have a pandemic worldwide in the midst of this? This is the power for me of the pandemic. It has laid things bare for anybody who loved being unclear, for anybody who is addicted to disassociating from others' suffering and from other people's pain. The challenge for me, I don't know what to do about this. I'm just telling you where I'm at now. I think we have to create communities of resilience. Yes, I think we have to create communities of resilience. What I mean by this is no one in this country from the very beginning believed that we could live together. That's our legacy. And when we see and feel what we see and feel and experience, how could it be otherwise? We started that way. This is karma. And karma can be healed and karma can be transformed, but only if we choose to do so. The community of resilience is one of kindness, openness, generosity, sanity, and loving. And there are so many people in this land who do not believe this is possible. So for me, I haven't figured it out. I know it has to be concrete. It has to be embodied so that people, when people encounter it, they go, oh my goodness, I didn't know experientially that this was possible. I'm practicing right now with a few mantras. The first one is, stand up in the house of belonging. Don't act like this is not your land. Don't act like you can't take charge because it's obvious to me that these principalities and powers who are supposed to be in charge of this land at this moment are absolutely incapable. So stand up, act like you're a real human being. Don't let somebody define your life for you or power for you. The second is, take your seat at the table of healing and transformation. I'm thinking of the words of my grandma. She said, don't let some fool take your seat. Take your seat, stand up, be present and care for yourself. Love yourself, because as you love yourself and care for yourself, that love will leak out. It will spill out all around you with the fragrance of holiness. And the third is, ride with the winds of change, unafraid. Act like the mighty ones of old, who knew no fear. Embrace their wild resilience and their vision of what is really possible for us together. So those are the words of Larry Ward. And I appreciate his teachings because I find it very accessible and it grabs me in a very organic way. And most importantly, I really appreciate how he talks about trauma, ancestral grief and our emotions in such a realistic way and with such deep understanding rooted in lived experience, which requires no burden of proof and no explanation. I often hear from my friends who are white or colleagues who are white, and they express how much they want to help to address racial injustice because they see how people of colors are doing all the emotional labor. I I appreciate the good intention. And let me repeat the words of Larry. Trauma must be, like, okay, let me back it up. One of the ways I practice with my own trauma is to let it be, not try to fix it. Trauma must be respected because it is part of our precious humanness. Trauma is a very important part of our healing. There is no bypassing. Therefore, it is not, it is important that we don't see or undermine it as an emotional labor. And I attended a People of Color retreat led by Larry a few years ago, and this was recorded in his Dharma talk, so I'm not sharing any personal, anything personal about him with you. And he talked about how he doesn't like someone standing behind him. And do you understand where it's coming from? Slavery, right? People are being washed over. People stand behind a black person back in the days of slavery. And that is his trauma. And that is his ancestral grief. In 1994, there was a short period of time where I felt a lot of fear. And it was such deep fear. I spent time feeling it. I spent time with my fear. And I felt that it was such immense fear. And I knew it was not just my fear. And I knew it was my ancestors' fear because I felt it so deep throughout my body. And I knew it went back to generations in my lineage, and I knew it had something to do with my great-grandmother. And that year, a few months later, that year, I went back to visit my family, and it's only then I found out my great-grandparents were Canadians. I did not know my entire life until then. In my family, they became Canadians, my great-grandparents, and then we skipped two generations of not being Canadians. And then I came to this country and I became a citizen. And then instantly I understood that was her fear. It was her grief. It was her trauma. And I felt it. And when I practiced with it, it became such a gateway to honor my ancestry and to work with my trauma and to understand it. And it was such an immense opportunity. So attending to our trauma is very important. And on anger, and let me repeat his words again. And it is very important here to understand the point of anger in Buddhism. Anger is normal, perfect human experience that you may and I may be having in daily life. But especially at this moment, the point of this is not to lose ourselves. Have I been angry? Have I been frustrated? Absolutely, more so recently. In fact, I was so angry, I was so frustrated, I was royally pissed off. I want to just walk away. I wanted to just walk away. I could not even sit. Until a few days ago, I happened to listen to a recording of Thich Nhat Hanh, and you know how he always talk about breathing in, breathing out, I have arrived, I am home. And he talks about the importance of practicing with your breath, and that's the importance of being in the here and now, to bring in peace in your own body. And then he goes on to explain further. Peace means the absence of conflict. And then at that instance, I understand my anger. And I was given the tool to work with my anger. When my body when I arrive at my body, when I have peace in my body is my country. And it's only when I'm here now that I'm arriving in my own home, in my own country, then and only then I can regain sovereignty. And that's my pathway back to my own cushion. So again, that's the importance of attending to our own anger. And also the importance of choosing this piece, because as you know, is very recent. Larry is an American teacher, and his writings about this experience is very much an American experience. And he also talked about the pandemic. I know we may all have the pandemic fatigue, because this is the time we are living in and it has talked about so much. And I think at the onset of the pandemic, our own teachers and other Zen teachers also talk about the importance of seeing the pandemic as our teacher. And Larry likes to integrate and refers to indigenous wisdom. And in indigenous way, another way of saying it is the pandemic is our medicine. And when it comes to medicine, it's never about what we want. It's about what we need. So we have been given COVID-19. And it's very important for us to understand and accept the property of this medicine. Somehow it brings out all the shadows in our collective closet. We are going through our collective dark night of the soul. And we are all taking shelter in place. None of us is going far. We're staying at home. And it's very important to work with our shadow, to accept it. Some of us may still want to go back to normal. And normal to me means the norm. Now, it could be, the norm could be, let's go back to our society where children can go to school, we can go back to work to our office. We may even be able to go to a movie in a theater, or go back to have a normal meal with our friends in a restaurant. We can even go and sit next to each other at our Wall Street Zendo. Wouldn't it be nice? But normal to me means the norm, where in our mainstream society, where colonialism and systemic injustice and racial violence reside. So this is about radical acceptance of not choosing normal. It's about radical acceptance of gathering our courage so we can have a new way of being with each other. And what I appreciate about Larry and his work, he is very pragmatic, and he even said in his writing, he is dreaming of a community. He talks about the importance of having communities of resilience, and he said he doesn't know what it is like yet. And I really appreciate that. It's not for us to figure out the means of the solution, what it is about. More important is for us to hear what we are being asked to do now. And he talks about Mother Earth, not to forget our greatest ancestors, our Earth Mother. Our Earth Mother is calling her children home. We have been asked to stay home. We have been asked to return to our own home. we have been asked to return to our own country. And I really believe it's when we return to our own home, not so much figuring out what the new way could be, what the new normal could be. It's only when we come back to our own home, we can be in that new openness where we can meet the new possibilities. The new possibilities of new humanness, of the new way of being with each other. So I'm going to leave it at that. So the question I am inviting us to discuss tonight, and I'm putting in the chat box right now. The question is, how have colonialism and its system been permeated in your body? How do you practice with what arises? So it's a two-part question. One more time. How have colonialism and its systems been permeated in your body? How do you practice with what arises? And I'm going to turn it back to our teachers.
Thank you very much, Remek. Much to sit, I think, in stillness and feel connected to ourselves as we take in your words. And Larry, thank you for introducing Larry Ward. He's not so much one of the big names in the Dharma world, but I think he has much to teach us. So let's do our practice of careful listening and speaking in small groups, and we'll divide you up, and you can each have about 3 minutes to respond to the questions that Remek has given us.